Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Hello to you whenever you are listening to this program. Welcome to Villa Speaks. I am Villa Willis, the host of this program, and I am glad and grateful that you are here. The purpose of this program is to provide information, resources, tips, and keys that can help you with personal and professional development, work-life balance, and most of all, using all those things to create and live your best life. My intention of giving you access to experts, which I started in September, who can assist you in making these last months of 2018 the best months of the year and give you an amazing foundation for having a fulfilling, fun, joyful, and transformative 2019. And so I'm very excited about my special guest who's coming up, and I just want to get us all focused. So I'm inviting us to all to take a centering breath so that we are present and here and ready to hear what this wonderful lady has to share with us today. So I just encourage you to join me in taking three centering breaths. My guest for today is Dr. Amber Dietrich, and she has been in the medical field for over 17 years, and she is a loving wife, a compassionate pharmacist, and an infertility and MS warrior. She's dedicated her life to conquering all the negativity that's been thrown at her, and even though it's a daily struggle, she knows it can be done. And without further ado, I'm going to bring on my special guest, Dr. Dietrich, and I'm also going to ask her a question from something I see she posted on Instagram. Doctor, are you there?
I am. Good morning. How are you? Well, good afternoon.
Yes, afternoon to you. Good morning for me. Is today your wedding anniversary?
Well, it was actually on Wednesday was my wedding anniversary,
okay.
But I had surgery on Wednesday, and so I'm just now able to post today.
Oh, my goodness. I'm glad that you're on here. I didn't know you had surgery, and so thank you so very much for making time.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
I'm very interested, excited to have you on the program, and interested in just your journey. So I'm going to let you start where you want to start. I'm going to take that back. Tell me about how you became a pharmacist and how that has propelled you on the journey that you're on.
Let's see. So when I was 16, I knew then that I wanted to work in the medical field. I just didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. So my mom took it upon herself to get me a job at CVS as a pharmacy technician to kind of get my foot in the door in the medical field, and I fell in love with it. I graduated from high school after working as a technician for 4 years, went to college, was still a pharmacy tech, and then I got my bachelor's in biology. From there, I was always Air Force Reserve. After I graduated from college with my undergrad, I went Army active duty and deployed to Iraq for a year, which is where I met my husband. When I got back from Iraq, that is when I went to pharmacy school.
Wow, you have like 5 million adventures already happening in this time.
I do.
You tell me what you want to talk about today. I'll tell you that I had you on the program because I'm wanting people to know that everyone has obstacles, but it doesn't mean they can get in your way. Some you can climb over, some you can go around, and some you have to smash through. So share your journey of what you deal with, MS warrior, infertility warrior, and just your inspiring story.
And I think that's a very good thing you say, you know, overcoming your obstacles. And I think sometimes you have to take your obstacles with you because sometimes you can't overcome them, and especially not all at once. And I say that in reference to my MS. So I was diagnosed in 2016, shortly after we got married. We'd only been married 6 months, and I was at work at a hospital. I was a hospital pharmacist at the time, and the symptoms just hit me suddenly. I mean, I lost complete function on my left side within a day or so. So they ruled out stroke. They ruled out Guillain-Barré, anything they could think of. And then finally, they told me that it was MS. And so they said, you may or may not be able to return to work as a pharmacist. So that made me say, okay, well, I will return to work as a pharmacist. And from then on, I had to just turn everything around because they said, well, you may not be able to do this and your quality of life may change. And I had to become determined. Like, I'd only been out of pharmacy school 9 months at this time, and I've been doing this since I was 16, so not doing this was not an option for me. So I kind of just learned to carry my MS with me. I have what's called cold-sensitive MS, so when it's cold outside or if I get cold, that's when my symptoms are kind of triggered. Mm-hmm. So the way I enjoy that is I have very, very lovely winter wardrobe. So when it gets cold outside,
okay,
that's when the boots and the scarves and the hats come out, and I make it what it is, and I make it fun. So instead of thinking about, I can't go do this because I have MS, I say, well, I need to buy a new sweater so I can go do this because I have MS.
So tell me, you glazed over something, and I think that there's such an energy and a power in what you said. You said, they told me I may or may not be able to return to work, and then you said, well, I'm going to return to work. What was that process? Because I know a lot of people hear that and they go, oh my Lord, my life is over. So how did, what was your internal structure? What was your internal thoughts that made you think, well, no, I'm gonna go back to work?
Well, one, I've been doing this since I was 16, so it was really all I knew, and I had grown to love my interaction with the patients and the community and actually making a difference in the medical field. And I just couldn't see myself doing that in at least some capacity. So I told myself, even if I couldn't be, one of the frontline pharmacists, I still wanted to do something in the industry, whether it was teaching or coaching, but not doing anything at all was not an option for me.
So very interesting. I was speaking with a young lady the other day, and she wanted a certain outcome of something. And I said to her, well, even if the outcome isn't what you want, it doesn't mean it's not the right path. So, you have to have the understanding that if you believe all
exactly.
things are working together for your good, even this
exactly.
thing is in that. And so you said, I still want to be able to do. So what I hear, instead of giving up and saying, oh, this is over, you said, well, if I can't, your mind was, I'm going to do what I love, but if I can't do it in that capacity, I'm still going to be in the field. And so can you unpack the mindset that you have? How did you get that? What makes you think that you can just think or create or have?
I attributed everything to, I think Iraq was a very life-altering time of my life. I grew closer to myself. I grew closer to God. I mean, you're in the middle of the desert, literally in the middle of a war. And I focused on him and I focused on myself and I looked at everything that I was fighting against. And you always have to remember, someone else has always got it worse than you do. So I had to stop complaining about what was going on with me, because here I am firsthand witnessing atrocities every day and things that I can do nothing about. But I can continue to try to be a pharmacist. I can continue to try to educate others, which is something those women over there are not able to do. And so I think that kind of was the turning point for me. Even though I was told I wouldn't be able to, I had to figure out how, because there are some women that really can't.
Wow. So, again, you're dropping these nuggets and you're saying them so like, so this is what happened. So, again, that you were able to see, that you were able to look at someone else, that you could have gotten Iraq and just got all lost in it and got all depressed. And that, you know,
right.
when I get out of here, you know. But, again, you were able to look. So can you explain the compassionate eye? You say that you're a compassionate pharmacist. So talk about, that's your compassion. And talk about how a pharmacist, like if you said, I'm a heart doctor and I help people, I'd be like, yes, I know how you do that. Or I'm a brain surgeon. That's how I help people. I was at a meeting and it was for optometrists. And I said, well, I never thought of my optometrists mm-hmm. as being in business, even though they own a place mm-hmm. that I go to and they have a staff. So
mm-hmm.
can you explain about what do you mean being a compassionate pharmacist? And talk about how you developed, or what is the foundation for you wanting and being a compassionate person?
Well, when I first started as a technician at 16, my great-grandmother at the time was very, very sick. She's passed away now. And so at 16, I took a liking into learning the medications that she was on so that I could explain them to her. And then I saw such a difference it made in just her understanding what she takes, why she takes it, why it makes her feel this way, why it may not be working, why it is working, you know, how can she tell? And it just kind of, I liked to be able to put the pieces together. Like, your doctor told you what's physically going on and he gave you this medicine, but you have no idea what this medicine is going to do. Even though this medicine may be the correct thing for you, I feel like people just still need to be informed. And pharmacy is always the last stop. So after they've been in the hospital for 2-3 days or even 2-3 hours, they get a prescription, and where do they go? They come to you because they need their medication and they need to go home. And all I can think about is, especially now that I don't live in the same city with my grandparents, that could be my grandmother walking up to the counter and need help that day. Or that could be my aunt or my uncle that needs help that day. And so I've always made it a point to go out of my way to help every single one of my patients, because you never know what that doctor told them. And now that I'm on the receiving end, I may get bad news sometimes at some of my neurology appointments or my infertility appointments, and I have to go to the pharmacy. And it's just so warming that the pharmacist, sometimes they don't even know that I'm a pharmacist, but they handle me with compassion because they have no idea what someone just told me.
Wow. Wow. So I want you to talk about a combination of things. So one of the things that I'm loving is that in the midst of challenges, in the midst of receiving news that could have gone left or right, you have chosen to continue to go forward, to stay focused. In the midst of your body saying, well, this is how we're going to work today. And then in the midst of being a woman, so you're college educated, you served our country, and I thank you.
Mm-hmm.
You're married, and then here comes this issue with infertility and MS. And so there is a great strength. There is a great focus. There is a great connection. There is obviously a thriving spirituality. Those things are inspiring me just in this small time we've had together. Can you unpack those in a way to where the listeners can hear, wow, what is going on with it? Because what I hear is I could have been defeated, and these are the reasons, but I chose not to. So I'm wanting, if you are able, to unpack that to where people can see it's a mindset. Now, I'm sure you're not doing this by yourself, so you have a support group. And so can you talk about the totality of the resources? What are the things that you draw on that you can to help you go forward?
Lately, I think it's very cliche, but I literally just think of the positive. Think of what can come of this if you just hold on. And then I think of that God gives his toughest battles to his strongest soldiers. He wouldn't be putting me through all this if there wasn't something for me at the end of the tunnel. I think there's lessons in it. Everyone learns different lessons. I've learned patience. As much as I want to have this baby now, as much as I want to be over my MS now, I have to hear God telling me, be still, my child, it will come when it is time. So they are all intertwined, and I think at some point, even if you try to separate them out, it's all about patience and understanding in something bigger than yourself. And giving up is not going to get you there. So the only way to get there is to hold on, even if it's not as fast as you want to get there. But if you let go, you're really not going to get there. And there have been times where I have wanted to let go, where, you know, I can't go to another doctor's appointment and they give me more bad news. But same time, I can't stop going to the doctor either, because eventually my breakthrough is going to come. And if I'm not there that day, then I'm not going to get my breakthrough.
Wow, like Michael Jordan said, every shot you don't take, you miss. So
exactly.
Better to keep shooting.
Exactly.
So talk about, you said, the phrase, it's where you touched on your spirituality. It was so eloquent, it just went out of my mind. But so talk about that source for you and I like it that you, I love the authenticity and the honesty that, you know, there are times I feel like giving up. So what, how do you move forward? How does your husband support you in that? How does your family support you and your friends? Because one of the things that I was at a business meeting last night, and we closed the restaurant down, but we were all so inspired, all strangers, just three businesswomen who'd come to a business event and ended up just having the most amazing time. But it's a, it was the support that not, these women weren't my competition. I'm not trying to keep something. I was just spilling, do this on Instagram, do this on Instagram, do this, do this. And they're like, no, you do this. And it was like we were just throwing out information. And so the support and giving and nurturing. I, one of the things that a lot of people, I feel like when stuff goes bad for them, they got to hang on to what they got. You can't be compassionate. You can't think about others. You, and you're presenting a very opposite lesson. Can you unpack that some more and talk about your support and your how your support system helps you?
Well, my my husband, my rock, he's been there literally since from day one. I do have stepchildren involved, so he is always on the back end rooting me on and telling me he knows that our time is, and he's always there to kind of protect me and shield me because only he really knows sometimes the extent of what's going on. So sometimes when I'm not answering the phone or I'm not very responsive on social media, it's him kind of protecting me and shielding me and saying, you may not want to get online today. There's about six pregnancy announcements. And I say, okay, logging off. But I had to learn to tell people what I needed. Like if I needed a heads up that there's about to be a baby shower in the family, then I had to tell people that. I had to stop expecting people to know what to say to me because no one in my family has MS and no one in my family has dealt with infertility. So it was very frustrating in the beginning because I literally said to people, you don't even know how to support me. And they said, well, you didn't tell me how. And I assumed that everyone should know how.
Oh, but, now, hold on. You just dropped something so magical. One, if you need help, if you need support in a certain way, most people, if not everybody, is not a magical mind reader. If they haven't been where you've been, they don't know what you're talking about. And so say that again. They said, we don't know how, and you had to tell them how.
Right. I had to tell them, and I didn't in the beginning. So that took away a lot of my frustration because it was kind of a, they were treating me like I was fragile, but I didn't really want to be treated like I was fragile because I wanted people around and I needed to vent and I needed to talk about it. But they didn't know that I wanted to talk about it. You know, they thought maybe I'm fine, I'm good. So I had to tell them I'm not fine. You know, we had our first IVF embryo transfer in June and it was successful and we were pregnant for 8 weeks. And then I lost the baby in July. Late July of this year, which was our first miscarriage, and it was devastating. And I couldn't expect people to just know what to say because if it hasn't happened to you, you don't know what to say. But in the beginning, I did expect people to know not to talk to me about baby showers. Don't talk to me about someone else having a gender reveal. I had to just say it. And that's how I gain my support system. You literally have to build it. If it's not there, you can't get upset that it's not there. You just build you one.
So let's talk about something that is a part of our culture as African-American women, not to exclude other people. But what I want you to talk about is the myth of the strong black woman. That she does everything by herself. She never shows any weakness. She doesn't need any help. And that has got our high blood pressure through the roof, everything. Can you, will you mind speaking about how you had to come out of that myth?
Right. And especially for where I work, I am one of two research pharmacists, but I am the black pharmacist pretty much. And I'm 35, and so stepping into there, already have emotional issues going on and things at home. I can't go in there weak and as if I don't know what I'm talking about is what my mind is telling me. Because as a black woman, you have to go in there, you have to be strong, you have to be assertive, you can't let anyone run over you. And now I have this doctorate in front of my name. There's more expected of me because not many black women get one of these, and now I've got one, and what are you going to do with it? I can't just let it fall to the wayside because I've had all these other things going on in my head. Definitely a struggle because people expect you to wear that crown at all times, and the more you put on your crown, the more jewels you bedazzle it with, the more letters you get behind your name, the more hats you begin to wear, the bigger your crown gets. They don't think you should lay it down. They just think you should be better at carrying it.
And
so
now
I'm learning to let other people, right, I'm telling people to help me take my crown off and lay it down gently for a day or so, and then we'll put it back on.
Very true. And that is the challenge of the nurturer, that they know how to give, but they don't know how to receive. And that for, especially for women who are in positions of authority and in power, that oftentimes we take on the masculine way of doing things. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not a man, you also have an amazing, beautiful feminine aspect to you. And I always, whenever I'm coaching women, sometimes I tell them, you keep giving and giving and giving. When a cup is empty, what comes out of it? Nothing. And
exactly.
that time to refill yourself. So what do you do? Go ahead with what you say. What do you do to nourish your soul and to refill yourself?
So I do have my blog that I do try to keep up with and actually type out when I do have time. I do find comfort in writing. But lately, I think it's just been family time. Like I said, I was military for most of my adult life. So I promised myself that once I got settled, I would spend more time with family. And that's just what I make myself do, even if it's, you know, spending a day shopping in Home Goods with my husband or a day at grandma's or Sunday dinner. I'm always making time for other people because it makes me feel better. Some people like to be at home and that makes them feel good, but being out and about and seeing the world and actually not sitting at home watching the days go by helped me. I do daily meditation, so I have an app on my phone. In the mornings when I wake up, I just plop my earphones in. It's called mindful meditation. I do 2 to 3 minutes or however many minutes of deep breathing I need in the morning.
Wow, you have just... I am just very stunned and almost in a way with the authenticity with which you shared and that you have shared personal anecdotes and personal stories. So I want you to put on your military hat for a minute. Yes, I welcome that because, you know, it's so refreshing, especially with professional women. Oftentimes we get around each other. We want to put on this front. Well, that's the time we should be crying and asking for help around someone that is also a part of the same team. You know, and that for women, that whole infertility, I remember when I had a miscarriage, it's like it was probably the best thing for me at that time, but it hurt. I felt like I had failed, like somehow I had failed.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, why is it? It's like, okay, but I didn't have the words to say that, you know. And so, again, being able to look at those things and say, you know, I don't want to hear about that baby shower, okay? You know, so such authenticity, such just honesty. I can't even, it's just being honest and frank about stuff and asking for help, all the things that make us better humans. But I want you to put on your military hat now. And for my listeners, I had you on the program today because obviously God had a bigger plan. I had you on the program today to talk to people about living and making their best lives. So I want you to put on your military hat and combine it with just your amazing, compassionate hat. What are the actions that you see in your life? These are the things that I did that have me today at what could have been a defeated life. I'm living an active, successful, and wonderful life. What are the actions, the things you did, or your ways of being that have you at the place you are today?
So let's see. When I was deployed, the thing that got me through there was church. We worked 6 days a week, and on Sundays we did not work, so on Sundays was church for us. And that's what I did to maintain my faith out there. And I started making my plan for when I came home because I feel like you always need to have something that you're looking forward to. There's nothing wrong with a plan B, in my opinion.
Are you still there?
I'm sorry. Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. So there's nothing wrong with a plan B. So you're making your plan.
And so I found that planning it out so you know what's going on and it gives you a better footing, weighing your pros and cons, kind of knowing what's coming up next, so that once you're hit with adversity, like when I was hit with different things that would happen, I knew what resources I had to deal with it, and I would look in my resource box, and if I didn't have a support system or didn't have an outlet and I found myself trying to go it on my own, then I knew that was my next step as well. But I do feel like military changed me a lot. It did make me grow up. It made me more independent. I joined when I was 17, and then you leave your home and you leave everything you know, and you go to training and you go here and you go there. And I did it for the money for school because I knew my parents couldn't afford to send me to college. So that's originally why I joined. Like I said, I always had a plan. Then I traveled and I saw the world and I saw how I could be helpful in the medical field, and it just gave me that drive even more. So after coming back from Iraq and thanking God for making it through that, I immediately applied to pharmacy school and I immediately got in because I knew that if I didn't do it today, then tomorrow I would be sad if I didn't do it, that I can't just keep waiting because some of these people don't have a tomorrow. Like I saw their death in front of me. They don't have a tomorrow. And so as long as I have a tomorrow.
Wow. As long as I have a tomorrow, I have a plan. And part of what I hear you saying is that you have to get out of your comfort zone. Went to the military. Mm-hmm. Is not like at home, and you traveled the world that you saw, you went, you adventured. So many people are stuck and stay in the exact same place. We got about a minute left. If you had, if you could say something to your younger self, what would you say in this last minute?
Be patient. Be patient in all things, and all things will come to you when it's time.
Well, very good.
Yes,
so how can people get in contact with you, darling?
So my Instagram is Paging Dr. Deets. That's P-A-G-I-N-G-D-R-D-I-E-T-Z. It's short for Dietrich. That is also my Instagram page and my blog. They all have the same web address.
Excellent.
Feel free to
very
follow me on my journey.
Excellent. I am so thankful for having you on the show today. So many good lessons. I love that. If I have a tomorrow, then I have a plan. And about getting out
exactly.
of your comfort zone and being compassionate and believing in yourself. The whole, everything that you told me, that in the bottom line was you believed in yourself.
Right. And Kevin Hart said, you have to be your own personal hype man. If you don't think you can do it, then nobody else is going to think you can do it either.
If you don't think you can do it, nobody else will think you can do it. That's the perfect ending for this show. Dr. Deets, thank you so much for being on.
Thank you for
having me. Happy anniversary.
I enjoyed it.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm going to definitely have you on again. Wishing you a quick recovery and continued blessings. Take care, darling, and thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.